Selin immediately got to her feet and shook herself, showering bits of veld hay all over me, then put her muzzle deep into the bucket of water, drinking it all down with long gulps. As David opened the door, it was forced back by the tremendous weight of packed hail without. Ice lay banked up against the stone walls. Going to the window, I removed some logs and looked out over a bank of hail packed solid up to the ledge. A cold mist filtered in off the hail, and the slope without was packed with it right down to the stream, which was now a raging torrent bordered with ice. The broken bodies of buck, baboons, hares, snakes and rats and birds of all kinds, mixed with lumps of hail, swept past with the current. Some remained in an eddy beside the bank, broken, lifeless bodies battered to death by the vicious storm and swept into the merciless flood. What a soft hyphen ribble toll, and we would have been added to the massacre, but for the shelter of the stout hut. I pondered for a moment the ruthless way of nature and said, "You know, Dave, we are no more important than a blade of grass in the infinity of the universe." After a good breakfast, we waited for the rising sun to melt the hail. Selin put her head down and sniffed the hail, snorting and pawing at it. I could see she was longing to gallop free over the veldt as is the way of horses in the exhilarating wind after a storm. She checked herself. However, sensing the slippery danger on the ground and the devastation of the storm's aftermath. Instead, she stood still and we gave her some lucerne to eat. "It was wise to leave the other horses in the shelter of the hostel," I said. "I felt we should not bring them." "Yes, I'm glad I walked up." "How did you know, Mum?" "By observing the clouds early yesterday morning as we were prepping to ride up here to meet Akin. Great drifts of hail lay about, and we had difficulty in negotiating the path down the slopes on our way back to the hostel, as it was choked with ice and debris. Before I went into a deep sleep, I could hear the soothing sound of the nearby waterfall as it tumbled over the crowns into the depths of the pool below. Its gentle rushing brought me slowly awake in the morning. We were soon off again, winding our way up the path over the foot-soft hyphen hills to the high plateau and away to the foot of Cathkin. The atmosoft hyphen sphere was crystal clear and the great mass of Cathkin soared into the blue sky in perfect detail. Every crevice and shelf was clear and sparkling in the sunshine. The sheer rock faces were cleansed and beautiful, as nature recovered with rapid vitality everywhere after the savage onslaught of the devastating hailstorm. The going was soft for the horses, and we moved swiftly across the high plateau. A troop of baboons paused in their rummaging for beetles and roots in the soft rain-soaked earth to watch our passage. They were the lucky ones, I thought, whose wise leader had taken them all into the shelter of a cave before the vicious cloud let loose its barrage of ice. The baboon leader gave us a deep bark of recognition and then resumed his search for succulent creatures under rocks and tufts of veldt grass. We rode onto the foot of Cathkin Peak itself, where the steep, grass-mantled slopes folded into the streamed. There, we dismounted in the shade of indigenous trees sheltered in the folds of the steep slopes and made camp to await the coming of Akin. The horses quietly grazed about the banks, contentedly pushing each other out of the way with their muzzles, while we made tea with honey to sweeten it and ate whole wheat and soft hyphen weeshes with lettuce and tomatoes. The only sound was the gentle rushing of the stream and the sigh of the breeze through the trees. Another day and another night passed before Akin landed in his spaceship of light, and we were together again in the safe and remote fastness of Cathkin. "My beloved, it is safe for you to return to the farm," Akin said to me one evening as we sat on the grassy bank beside the rushing mountain stream. "Go back and rest, and I shall fetch you from there." So we spent another few wonderful days with Akin in the fastness of the mountains, before taking the horses quietly back to the farm. 6. Beyond the time barrier, to Alpha Centauri, there was consternation back on the farm. Cookie, my sister's little white dog, a special pet of the family, was missing. "We've called and called," my sister, flushed and wretched, told me. "We cannot find him." "Oh. I could say no more, because I knew in my heart what had happened. The poor little creature, I thought, and my throat tightened as I visualized the scene of his demise. Being white, he was looked upon as the white woman's familiar spirit. His value as something unusual was enhanced since he had been seen watching, without fear, the great ship from the universe. Being white and male, he was indeed strong Amuthi or medicine, and Pau soft hyphen ruffle Amuthi, would have to be found because a white man had landed in his magic wagon on the mountain top. My sister was too miserable to wonder at all. She had tried every soft hyphen thing and offered a substantial reward to recover Cookie. All the farm women, children and men had turned out to search, aided by two trained hunters with their dogs. They found only silence, a sinister silence, and nothing else. "I'm a bit worried," Jock said thoughtfully, "about the groom and that wife of his. Since those ritual murders on the border, she has been forcing him along a very slippery path." "That means," I whispered. I left the statement unfinished, though, as I suddenly realized that Muti was waiting. "He must know something," I thought. "Inka Sazana, last night I went to my Nyanga or witch doctor, just over the river here to ask of the dog. He is dead. Mke brought a bitch in season to the garden. When your little white dog came out, Mke caught him and took him away. That night he died. He was sacrificed, a ritual murder, as you call it, because a white creature at mating time is very good medicine. For a piece of his liver no bigger than your little fingernail, people will pay much money. Such a Amuthi makes them strong and able to procreate and add children to their wealth. Sexual weakness is regarded with abhor soft hyphen rents. This medicine also keeps evil spirits away. But the little dog's eyes were especially valuable, as no other crab soft hyphens would be, because he had sat in the grass and watched the great cloud ship without fear. Because of this, he will give the strength of that white man from the clouds to those who consume his liver. Be quiet about this, Jock told Muti. Then Kosagaz will say not soft hyphening until we have found, through the police, our own Nyanga to tell us. The sergeant suggested we ask for the truth through the Zulu system. There is a woman he recommended. Fear not. Akan will come for me. The next day, they interviewed a woman named Bolofit. She was fey, and trusted by the police as fearless and truthful. She was known throughout the country. In her beehive-shaped hut, made of tambuti grass tied to a shell of slender wattle saplings, the white people sat on chairs while she sat on her heels on a grass mat facing the light. A girl grandchild came and lay against her hip. My sister gave her the requested fee and the little white dog's small tartan coat. Bolofit told the same tale Muti had heard. She added that the dog had been moved the afternoon before from the loose earth on the dam wall, and his body thrown into the swift, snow-fed river with a stone tied to it. No evidence left now with the body gone, muttered Jock. Thank you, Bolofit, my sister said. Who did this? Mkay, replied the woman. So it was my trusted groom, my sister said thoughtfully. Poor little Cookie. He was never really happy or comfortable after he went blind watching the spaceship. Remember, the vet said he probably got frightful head soft hyphen aches. Perhaps that pagan-hearted Mke will get headaches too. I wonder how he knew Cookie couldn't see at all. I wonder if he did know? He simply used him to absorb Akan's strength and greatness, I answered. Then we must protect you, my dear. Because once they know Akan has made you pregnant. My sister suddenly realized the terrible implications, and her face blanched with anxiety. Then there are the politicians, she went on. They will try and get you, and the terrorists will attempt to kidnap you. What are we going to do? I shall appeal to the authorities again for protection. Then again, she said, placing her hand to her heart, the mark of lineage will be seen in the facial features of the developing life within you, once he is born. Fear not, I said softly, feeling the joy of the quickening body within mine. Akan will come for me. His son will not be born on this planet, where a racialistic outlook submerges all sane and intellectual thought. His skin is also white, of a golden hue, born of a fair skin race, and as you rightly say, this mark of lineage will be seen in his facial features. An exhilarating happiness filled those days of quickening life within me. The halcyon days were filled with joy, with a life so precious, a part of Akan to be nurtured, protected and loved, a life from another planet to be encompassed with the essence of love and joy that a woman knows and gives to the quickening child within her womb when the embryo stems from the seed of love. This is the spark that creates the divine soul in human life, a divine soul born in the offspring of a true mating between a man and a woman. True and complete love, of a man for a woman and a woman for a man, is so rarely found among human beings on Earth, who misunderstand the functions of mating and procreation in the higher octaves of sensual delight. One golden day I sensed the nearness of Akan. My heart became restless as I awaited a sign in the evening sky. The full moon rose over the line of hills in the east, and the still and tranquil hush of evening light spread over the darkening mountains to the west. I kissed May goodbye. "I know you will care for David," I said. "Bless you." And I was gone in the MG, winding along the mountain track to the top of the hill behind the homestead beyond the oak wood. I had not long to wait. The beautiful ship of light appeared, moth-soft hyphening silently through the moonlit atmosphere. Opalescent and ethereal in the moonbeams, it quietly settled on the hilltop. Bluish, unearthly light streamed from the portals, and the ship remained silent for a few brief moments. The automatic doors opened then, and Akan stepped through. He came to me and picked me up in his arms, holding me close. "Now I am really going to carry you off with me to another planet," he whispered, his lips in my hair as he carried me into the spaceship. Sharon smiled a greeting from his control desk, and Haven was there too. "Hello, my dear," he said, as Akan put me on my feet. "You look both soft-tiful and well, and also large with child as we hoped. It suits you. There is a radiance about you. The child is due to be born. When a child is born, we must reach for the stars," Akan said. "We have just moved from Mars, and must now be off again to Alpha Centauri. But my car. I cannot just leave her out there on the hill." "We will take the car too," said Akan. "We never had piston engines like that, and besides, the engine needs some adjustment. I shall attend to that myself. Can you visualize it all now in your mind?" Sharon pressed a lever beside the control panel, and I saw a ramp slide out from an opening in the hull. A brilliant beam of white light envelsoft-oped the MG. It rose, suspended within the light, and was drawn swiftly forward onto the ramp and into the hull of the spaceship. The ramp instantly slid back, leaving no trace of an opening in the side of the hull. "The MG is quite safe in the hold, my beloved one," Akan smiled. "You won't need it on the home planet, there are no filling stations there and no roads. Such an antiquated mode of transport would appear out of place." Sharon adjusted the push buttons on the control panel. I sensed again that fantastic vibration, like a shudder from outside the sealed cabins, as the spaceship moved in instantaneous anti-light harmonics, stepping up the frequency interaction of the speed of light and speeding up the geosoft-metric of time, altering the frequencies controlling the matter-antimatter cycles, the geometric matrix of space-time. I closed my eyes and relaxed on the comfortable bench as Akan placed his hand on my forehead. I felt a harmonic affinity with all substance, a resonance tuned to matter and antimatter in alternate pulses. "You understand now, my beloved, the nature of our propulsion systems. The equation is quite clear within your mind. You can move in harmony with us. You can know the beautiful simplicity of nature as we alter the microatoms of light, the basic building blocks of all energy and matter, pure electromagnetic waveforms, the key to the universe and all life, where all protons and neutrons are built up from microatoms. Can you visualize it all now in your mind?" "Yes, indeed," I replied. I can see it all so clearly, in all its glorious simplicity, assemblies of microatoms throughout all matter and anti-soft-matter, consisting of three within four in alternate pulses. The whole universe is a pulse of energy, resonating in harmonic interaction to form different waveforms. Physical matter, like this spaceship and ourselves, is nothing more than a concentrated field of force. We are made up of these waveforms, and we can feel and see similar waveforms that resonate within our range of frequencies. The spaceship achieves a shift in space-time simply by stepping up the frequencies of light and time between each pulse of fizzy-soft-cal matter. It is a planet formed by three spiraling wave motions in space, and it repositions itself within the spatial dimensions of the planet by decreasing frequencies between pulses. Thus it appears in the time geosoft-metric of the planet, which can be anywhere in space, in the sun's sis-soft-tem or in another solar system altogether. Created by the harmonic interaction of the unified field differentials emanating from the spaceship herself in terms of light, or pure electrosoft-magnetic waveform, the unified field equation manifests in perfect harmony. I can see now the simple equation that creates it all. The letters and the figures are clearly seen in my mind, there is no need to write the formula down. The mathematical precision and placing of the numbers and letters will remain forever within my mind. It is already within the mind of our child, who will now be born with this knowledge of highly advanced physics. Good. This is how it must be. You are an excellent pupil, my dear, and indeed worthy to be one of us and the mother of my son. Akon held me close in his arms, pressing my head against his chest with his left hand so that I could feel the strong beat of his heart in rhythmic perfection. And then I saw it, another brilliant sphere, another home of life, another island moving in the vast void of space, another Venus. There are two of you to look after now. My child within you is stir-soft-ring and will be born as soon as we reach my home. Your bloodstream has been cleansed by the pure, fresh air in the spaceship. Despite your living for many months on the farm where the air was clean, the amount of pollution in Earth's atmosphere now encircles the entire planet. It has reached a very dangerous level. Because of this measure of pollution, we only land on the high remote areas of mountains. Come. There is a bath and change of garments for you in the small cabin. Holding me close and whispering words of love, he went with me into the smaller cabin. The single garment I put on hung in rich and soft folds of silk to my ankles. Simple and free, it concealed the thickening of my waist, hanging from the shoulders. It had wide, loose sleeves like a kaftan and shimmered golden yellow with threads of green. The golden silk matches your amber eyes, Akon said softly. He cradled my feet in his big hands. Your feet are small and broad, there is no need for the restriction of shoes. He fitted a beautiful pair of silken sandals, the color of the sapphire sea, to my feet. Then he changed out of his silvery suit into a garment of soft glowing silk and a pair of sandals like mine. Haben called to us to come and watch the viewing lens. We moved toward the shining, curved wall, our thoughts triggering the electronic doorway that slid open at our approach. I caught my breath with excitement as I glimpsed tremendous colors in the lens. The most awe-inspiring spectacle was taking shape, suffused in brilliant yellows, rose-red and blue with vast streamers of soft rose-red that reached out into the silken darkness of fathomless space. The brill soft-liant colors cleared after a moment, and two gigantic stars glowed in the far reaches of the void. One shone with deep blue radiation, and the other with a glory of rose-red. A third, much smaller, star vibrated in soft golden light radiation in a wide orbit around the two. This was Alpha Centauri, seen in all the glory of pristine radiation. The great waxing stars balanced each other in the prime of their lifespans, harboring a race of people who tame the winds of space to propel their beautiful spaceships. Through the filtered lens, I watched stupendous prominences looping out and shifting in continuous agitation as rifts of typhonic waves and branches of light emitted outward from the photosphere in dense radiation. Stupendous energy filled the vast reaches of space that surrounded the splendor of this triple solar system, and the glory of Akan's home system filled the lens with magnificent color and movements. And then I saw her, another brilliant sphere, another home of life, another island moving in the vast void of space, another Venus. This was Meeten, or Venus II, the home of an advanced race of people, a world of gentle climate and gentle people, vast seas of sapphire blue and emerald dials in an atmosphere similar to Venus when it had lived, harboring the beginnings of this fantastic race of people. Other planets could be seen with their bright atmospheres, moving with a slow and graceful purposefulness around the small golden star. The star moved with its retinue of seven planets in orbit about the two great stars, well within the tremendous corona of this magnificent star system known to Earth people as Alpha Centauri. The star of our system is known to Earth people as Proxima Centauri, and all these planets are inhabited by our civilization. We live in constructive harmony and peace. We moved from Venus in the Sun's system to make our home here, which is now permanent because we can control our environment. Our science and our understanding of stars, planets and solar systems have advanced considerably since we lived on Venus. Venus, to us, is still the home planet, the cradle of our race, and it is for this reason that we come into the Sun's system to touch down on that planet's surface and bring it to life again. Beneath her desert surface she still lives and thrives. The beautiful mountains of rose-colored drops will again breathe an atmosphere of cerulean sky, and the moisture-giving clouds will spread out over the surface to form the seas again. And the variable star of her system, the Sun. Can you now tame the Sun? I asked. Indeed, yes. This is what we are in the process of doing. Will it change the climate on Earth? Of course. All planetary weather is controlled by the star of the planet's solar system. And a triple system like this one? These are stable, waxing stars without magnetic anomalies, Akan explained. They interact with harmonic resonance, creating equable climates over the planets. This also makes it much safer for our spaceships to operate in harmonic interaction with the unified field of matter and antimatter. Anomalies in Earth's atmosphere have caused fatal accidents to two of our spaceships when the matter-antimatter cycle of their propulsive-cyan systems shifted frequencies, while moving within the resonating fields of the system. Tremendous explosions resulted, releasing a high level of radiation. Our scientists, at the instant of alarm detection within the spaceships, set course over remote, unpopulated areas of the planet Earth. The explosions occurred in the atmosphere, and unusually high levels of radioactivity remained on the surface. Oh! So that clears up the mystery of the Tungus Tiger, I whispered with awe, where an explosion overhead ripped the forest to bits. And of course, the crew simply disappeared. I could say no more and moved closer to Akan. The splendor in space of the great stars and the glory of Akan's home system filled the lens like the electric mirage I had seen long ago in the vintage mothership, who could bring this fantastic scene to her people far away in other and strange solar systems, to keep in touch with their time system through the far reaches of interstellar space. The Venusian mothership still retained the highly civilized contact with her people that she had in days of yore, no matter where in the galaxy they had now migrated to. Moving smoothly within her environment as a natural celestial object, our spaceship appeared high in the atmosphere of the speeding planet Meeten, or Venus II, the second planet outward from the golden star, Proxima Centauri. As we descended, a great glistening cloud billowed up over the sea, a curtain of rain trailing and thickening at its base. The radiation from the three stars struck a golden irradiance out of the huge cumulus heads that spread out across the sapphire seas. We approached the circular roof of a home made of glistening matte-soft-hyphenry-like marble. The beautiful building was set on a dais of surrounding circular steps, perfectly symmetrical, rising from emerald lawns of shin-soft hyphening grass and scattered semicircular beds of brilliant flowers. Trees with bright green foliage were scattered across the landscape like a great park. The spaceship silently settled to the rooftop, its shining surface anti-soft hyphenished by the vast distances it had traveled or the atmosphere of planets. The ship moved beyond the velocity of light, as Earth people understand it, and in so doing it overcame the power of the universe. It annihilated the fathomless seas of space in its swift passage through time, going with the pressure force of the universe, gravity, and attaining the higher octaves of resonance by the absorption of light itself. Thus it annihilated the light barrier. How afraid Earth scientists were when they attempted to annihilate the sound barrier in the atmosphere with aircraft, I thought. And yet it had all proved to be so very simple, no trouble at all, as it is now with the light barrier. To reach another solar system within seconds, almost instantaneously, proved the simplicity of faster-than-light spaceships or flying saucers. I remember in years past how afraid they were of the sound barrier. They didn't know what to expect or how to overcome the problem of speed through the atmosphere of Earth. Jeffrey de Havilland's DH Swallow exploded in an attempt to break the sound barrier, just as some of these beautiful spaceships have exploded while breaking the light barrier. Sharon pressed a button on the control panel to nullify the space soft hyphen ship's systems. We waited a few seconds, while the field differentials dissoft hyphen dissipated, and Akin walked toward the shining wall. The door slid open at his thought. I heard joyful voices and laughter as Akin's family came into the spaceship to greet us. Akin took my hand and led me down a single flight of stairs that descended into the home from the landing ramp. A circular balcony of delicately carved railings glowed with the luster of pearl against golden walls. It curved around the building, bringing us to the second floor. I could see the great living room far below, a vast soft hyphen cooler chamber full of the glorious colors of the spectrum on the floor, the walls, the couches and the divans. The spiral staircase curved down the center of the circular building, the banisters hand-carved into a lovely delicate tracery of flowers and vines. These carvings were made of the same glowing material I had seen in the spaceship. Putting my hand on the smooth and lovely surface, we slowly walked down. "But this is pearl?" I said. "Real pearl? It's uneven in places too, and it has that natural pink luster. It's alive and giving out light." We paused to admire the lovely carving. Our aqueous atmosphere here and in the spaceships keeps pearl alive and vibrant as in its natural habitat, the sea, Akin explained. We use pearl for the building of our homes and for the construction of our space soft hyphen ships. Pearl lives on with vibrant light, and we farm this beautiful living substance within our vast seas. We live with it always, as it generates the light of the universe for our energy needs. How beautiful to live with! I have always loved pearls. I looked up into Akin's eyes. He put his arm about my waist so that I could lean against him and take the weight off my feet. "My beloved, I shall give you pearls to wear always, close to your skin." He opened a casket attached to the banister and lifted out the most beautiful pearl necklace I had ever seen, two rows of glowing, evenly matched pink pearls, with a clasp of 8 seed pearls surrounding a lovely ruby. I stood spellbound in the center of the stairway as he placed them around my neck. The soft, smooth coolness of the stones caused me to gasp with pleasure, and I put my hand up to press them against my throat. "Their light will give you light always. Wear them always with the ring, and our communication will remain unbroken forever." Akin put his hand under my chin, lifting my face up to his. "My chosen one, these pearls were left in the casket by my mother. She left them for my chosen one, whom she knew would come from another planet. Men of Earth live in a world of chaos and destruction. These are the heights of their understanding, and hydrogen bombs are the limit of their power. Claire and Haben came to me and put their arms about me, hugging and kissing me on both cheeks. "Welcome home, dear one," said Claire. "We are your family, your kin." Fetton came forward as well, with his mate Lyra and their three children, to welcome me with a hug and a kiss on both cheeks. "How wonderful and lovely you all are," I said, my heart brimming over with love for them all. I hugged and kissed each one of them again. "Thank you for letting me come. How happy I am to be here."